From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 130 of Little Brother for the 27th of May, 2023. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or you can post a message to the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. We've got lots of headlines, so fasten your seatbelts and let's get started. Some school systems in the state of Kentucky are considering an AI-based weapons detection system. The system would observe students as they enter the building for any signs that they might be packing. On the one hand, this seems like a good application of the technology, since the AI will, unlike a human, not be likely to become fatigued. My biggest concern here is that school administrators have a well-earned reputation for being petty tyrants, and there is a high probability that a student who is mistakenly flagged by the AI will end up in detention or suspension despite being clean. U.S. Customs and Border Patrol have been using an AI tool called Babel X to screen travelers at the border. The tool is being used to screen citizens, visitors, and asylum seekers alike. The system explores the subject's history, including any social media posts that they may have made or that the system thinks is relevant. This concerns me mostly because AI is still somewhat prone to mistakes, and the process of their decision-making is often impenetrable and opaque. It's been a hot minute since I talked about Facebook being fined. In episode 110, back in December, it was the Republic of Ireland fining Facebook 265 million euro. Before that, in episode 107 from October of last year, it was the state of Washington fining them $10.5 million. This one, however, is a record. The Irish authorities are teaming up with the European Data Protection Board and collectively fining Facebook 1.2 billion euro with a B, or approximately 129 billion US dollars at the time of this writing. An anonymous patient is suing Google over the collection of medical information. The patient, named as Jane Doe on the court papers, asserts that Google's collection of data from Planned Parenthood is in violation of California state laws, including the Confidentiality of Medical Information Act, or CMIA, and the California Invasion of Privacy Act, or CIPA. The suit alleges that Doe did not authorize or consent for Google to take possession of this information. Back in February, in episode 120, I spoke about two court cases before the Supreme Court: Tamanev versus Twitter, and Google versus Gonzalez. These court cases put at risk the one good provision of the 1997 Communications Decency Act, Section 230, which provides safe harbor for platform owners, so they are not responsible for the content posted by their users. The news here is that the cases have been decided in favor of Twitter and Google, and that Section 230 of the CDA remains intact, providing an important safeguard without which the internet as we know it could not have happened. It is mildly amusing that both of those court cases have alliterated names. It makes them easier to remember. I mentioned about a month ago, in episode 128, that the state of Montana was poised to ban TikTok. Well, they did it. Unsurprisingly, TikTok have filed a federal lawsuit against the state, alleging that the state of Montana is in violation of the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The lawsuit also alleges that the ban is in violation of the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution, and that the state law is therefore preempted by federal law. Who says that social media influencers can't do good? Shreya Nalamutu, a teenage influencer from Illinois, was noticing a pattern in the videos showing up on TikTok and other platforms in which videos of younger children were turning commercial. The wholesome family vlog was turning into a marketing opportunity. With her advocacy, the Illinois State Senate passed a bill unanimously that would require parents to set aside a portion of their children's earnings, modeling a law that's been on the books in California since 1939 concerning child performers. The bill still needs to go through the State House, come back to the Senate for a final review, before being sent to Governor J.B. Pritzker for his signature. Speaking of the children, Governor Glenn Youngkin, a Republican of Virginia, signed a bill into law late last week that would impose strict age requirements on porn sites. The bill, which goes into effect on the 1st of July, affects websites where at least one-third of the content can be considered material harmful for minors. I mentioned a similar bill being signed into law in Utah a few months ago in episodes 124 and 128. This past Monday, the stock market was briefly rattled by the appearance of an image on the internet. The picture was of the lawn of the Pentagon in Washington, from where a massive plume of thick black smoke was emanating. Internet sleuths quickly set to work determining that the image was in fact a fake, generated by an AI. While the news was fake, the resulting market drop was very, very real and suggests a vulnerability that needs to be addressed. Senator Ed Markey, a Democrat of Massachusetts, has introduced a bill into the Senate that would require that all new cars be equipped with AM radios. While this seems odd at first glance, it's worth noting that car manufacturers have been making moves that would deprecate the older broadcast band, much like many of them have already done with compact disc players. The reasoning behind the bill is that AM radio is where people are likely to turn for information in the event of an emergency. It's maybe worth noting that two specific AM frequencies, 530 and 1610 kHz, are explicitly reserved for traveler information stations in the U.S. And lastly, some Android Power set-top boxes using system-on-a-chip hardware made by Rockchip and Allwinner are showing up in customers' hands preloaded with malware. The malware in question forms a botnet that appears to be carrying out click fraud. The devices in question are sold under a number of different brands, including T95 Max, Rockchip X12, and Rockchip X88 Pro 10. If you have one of these devices, take it offline until you can have it checked out. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned this time. For the first item, I have something kind of mundane. A system operated by the U.S. Department of Transportation, called TransServe, was breached. About 237,000 current and former employees of the department have had their personal information exposed in the breach. For the second item, this is not really a pwn, and I could swear I'd done a story on this something like this once before, but I couldn't find any evidence of it. As this podcast is well into its second year, it's getting harder to search past episodes, but this concerns a ransomware called Mollus Locker, which, rather than demanding a ransom payment to the ransomware gang that attacked, well, let me just read you an excerpt from their ransom note. It says, quote, "Unlike traditional ransomware groups, we're not asking you to send us money. We just dislike corporations and economic inequality. We simply ask that you make a donation to a nonprofit that we approve of. It's a win-win. You can probably get a tax deduction and good PR from your donation if you want," end quote. So there you have it. Ransomware for philosophical and political ends. By the way, patch your damn systems. Let me drop some news on you. Printers suck. That is a fact. The problems range from hinky drivers to poor construction to stupid interlocks, like requiring there be yellow ink in order to print black and white, or requiring that there be any kind of ink at all in order to scan. Do those words sound familiar? I said those exact words in episode 122 just 2 months ago. I have since realized that I omitted hinky firmware from that laundry list. As Ars Technica is reporting that HP pushed out a firmware upgrade for some of their Office Jetliner printers that bricked them. The firmware updates in question concern an HP feature called Dynamic Security, which first appeared about 7 years ago. The security measures, well, they need updates. It's on the same principle as updating your antivirus and malware detection. Ours is reporting that HP recommends disconnecting your printers, essentially missing the point. Now, I don't know how HP is running things, but if you're going to push out a firmware upgrade, it's kind of incumbent on you to test it thoroughly before doing so. When things like this happen, people don't patch their systems for fear of breaking them, and that's dangerous. To that end, an unknown software developer once said, quote, "Everybody has a testing environment. Some people are lucky enough to have a totally separate environment to run production in," end quote. Clearly, HP are not among the lucky ones. A few days ago, news broke that over half of the nation's senators have been issued satellite telephones and offered instructions in their use. It didn't take any time at all for the question to be asked, what do they know that we don't? That's actually a very silly question. Many of you who know me personally are aware that I am an advocate for emergency preparedness. It's something that everyone should do, senators included. It is also beyond any reasonable dispute that the events of the 6th of January 2021 should leave members of the Houses of Congress and their staff with some concerns about their security needs. While it is unlikely that a satellite phone would help them in the specific instance of an attack on the Capitol, that attack could reasonably get them thinking about their own individual safety and security needs. So, each House of Congress, the Senate and the House of Representatives, Each of those two houses has a staff member known as the Sergeant at Arms, and it is their role to ensure the safety of their respective House of Congress. The Sergeant at Arms of the Senate took the decision to offer these devices to the senators, and over half of them have accepted the offer. I am not aware of any particular partisan divide with regards to who did or did not take the offer. In short, there's nothing to see here. If you disagree, please feel free to request an opportunity for a rebuttal. Contact information is at the start and the end of every episode. Back in the 90s, Eric S. Raymond wrote an essay called The Cathedral and the Bazaar, and it compared two different models of software development: the closed-source world of commercial software, which he likened to a cathedral, a place where you could come into proximity of the Holy of Holies and pray for what you needed, but where the greater secrets were kept away from the plebs, and the open-source model, which he likened to a bazaar, a place where you could get whatever you want, some of it of questionable quality, some of it from multiple sources, very easily. Now, there are flaws in the analogy, but they're not important to where I'm going here. Google's approach to getting apps into your Android devices is rather bazaar-like. Yes, Google has an app store called the Google Play Store, and the vast majority of apps that you may want are available there at various price points, often including free. Some may even be open source, though the App Store doesn't really necessarily call that out when it is. Vendors get into the App Store quite easily, and if they don't, well, there are other app stores, such as F-Droid that carries open source software, or the vendor-specific stores installed on devices by default by Motorola or Samsung or OnePlus or whoever. On top of all of that, if you want to put an app on the phone that isn't available from any of the app stores you have, including maybe even just an app to access another app store, you can download an APK file and just install it. Easy peasy. Apple's approach is more like a cathedral. If you want an app installed on your iOS device, assuming that it hasn't been jailbroken, you get that app from the Apple App Store. If it's not there, you don't get it. Period. Full stop. The end. In theory, both Apple and Google vet the apps that are on their respective app stores. However, an app called iRecorder, whose purpose is ostensibly to let you record your screen, has been doing just exactly that, but not necessarily when you ask it to. At some point in time, an update was pushed out, causing the app to capture not just video of your screen, but audio regularly via your device's mic, and send it to somewhere about every 15 minutes. Now, there is some talk about this resulting from an espionage campaign. Since it was observed, it kind of suggests that it was maybe a tad ham-fisted for state-level spycraft. However, the bottom line is this. If you have this app installed, again, it is called iRecorder, then you need to uninstall it immediately. As a general rule, you should take care that only apps that you actually need are ever installed, regardless of what app store you get them from. If for no other reason than to reduce the likelihood of crossing paths with an app like this. As usual, we'll end the show with the fail of the fortnight. In 1940, Isaac Asimov wrote a short story called Robbie. 10 years later, he wrote a revised version which appeared in his compilation, I, Robot. In this story, there is a scene in which a young girl named Gloria, probably, I'd guess, about 5 years old or so, has a conversation with what Asimov described as a talking robot. This robot was immobile, so essentially what we would call a computer today. It was part of a tourist attraction, and it had a very basic ability to recall facts and to carry out reason in order to converse with tourists and answer questions. Questions posed to the robot were carefully vetted by a human, however, due to the machine's limited cognitive abilities. In today's world, we might call this an AI or a chatbot. One of its characteristics is that, since it had never heard a question that it couldn't answer, after all, they were vetted, it had no reason to believe that it couldn't answer any question at all. So when Gloria snuck past the minders and asked it if it could help her, it confidently responded, "I can help you." I think it is probably not a spoiler to state that it could not in fact help her, and that the effects of it trying to do so were, shall we say, expensive. Which brings us to a thing that happened recently in Texas. So, the current hotness in AI is, as it has been for several months now, ChatGPT. Folks who do not necessarily know of its capabilities and limitations are asking it to do things that really it is not equipped to do. You might remember, for instance, from episode 127, I had a talk with the axe that slayed me, who described her attempts to get ChatGPT to remember a thing long enough not to fall for a simple trick, and that after 2 hours, she gave up because it has apparently little retention or knowledge of what it has said or done. So, that brings us to Texas A&M University, where a professor of the school's Agricultural Sciences and Natural Resources program sent copies of all of his students' final papers to ChatGPT and then asked GPT whether or not it had authored them. With a confidence similar to that of the talking robot in Asimov's story, ChatGPT asserted that yes, it had in fact authored most of those papers. This fine member of academia gave all of the accused students failing grades on that paper, putting their graduations at risk. I mean, after all, he couldn't do something like, talk to the students or something. Maybe try to suss out the truth? Figure out for himself that the computer was lying? I mean, it's not like ChatGPT is known to lie and make shit up, right? I mean, it seems like he didn't even ask the computer for citations. I'm sure all the students at least did that. One of the students even denied knowing what ChatGPT is. So much irony here. Part of this professor's job was to make sure that his students weren't having a machine do their work for them, which he did by having that very same machine do his work for him. Thankfully, someone talked some sense into him before ruining the academic careers of most of a class. Had I not spent time in academia, I would say this was unbelievable. But sadly, I know better. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Mister 73, Zachy Mannion, Joe Cadillac, Knight Rider 007, Ed, Fongaboo, Julie Bernstein, Thriller at Play, and of course Asriel for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwnt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Fortnite music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation or argue with me about something I said, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next time when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Episode 130 will drop on June 10th. Stay safe and be well. In episode 110, back in December, it was the Republic of Ireland and the California Invasion of Privacy Act, or CPIA. CPIA? CIPA. Let's fix that. Tomne versus Twitter and Gonzalez versus Google. Google versus Gonzalez. About 237 current and thousands. 237,000. Not just video, but audio via your mic's device.
We did the thing!